Hello and welcome to another episode of Control Alt Access. You know the deal at this point. We talk about video game accessibility. I'm one of your hosts, Laura, and I'm here as ever with my lovely co-host, Arevia. How are you doing?
Oh my God, summer is over. Life is back to what it should be. Gaming has
Summer's not
happened.
over. There's still like a month of summer left, I need to tell myself. I don't want summer to be over yet.
I read the newspaper yesterday that, or some days ago, that we in Bergen, where I live, have had only 9 days where we have had sun this summer.
Oh goodness.
So,
That's not ideal.
no. So, this summer for me can just be over because it hasn't even
Yeah.
started.
I'm on the other end of the scale. I'm kind of near London over here, and we have been having once in a lifetime heat waves every like 2 weeks. Previously, if you were to ask, like, oh, when did the UK last have like 35 Celsius and higher temperatures, it'd be like, well, we had that one day like 6 years ago. We've got another heat wave coming next week that's again expected to be in the 35 to 40 plus range. And I'm like, oh no, climate change has come hard for us over here.
I hear what we need to do is just to take your whole island and then move it closer to Bergen, and then we can have the rain together.
Honestly, the way this summer has been, I move into Bergen. None of this heat wave nonsense. We could record in person. It'd be great.
Last time I actually did a stream, I had to tell myself like multiple downs times during the stream going like, but I can't actually complain compared to the rest of Europe. But it is a bit sad having like
Look.
my husband need to do like a proper like
Yeah.
rain coat, like the heavy thick one to go to work every morning.
I wouldn't be complaining if not for the fact that my PC does not like when it gets to like 38 Celsius. It won't. It struggles sometimes to record like video podcasts. It sometimes struggles with video exporting. It's like, it's too hot for me. I don't like it. Well, it's been a while since we recorded a Control Alt Access because life and scheduling. Part of that was I went on holiday for a couple of weeks. But we're back.
We're back.
What have you been playing? Tell me about something you've been
Oh my
playing.
God, I've been playing so many things and I have had such a good time because I've actually taken the summer completely off. And then I did something I have wanted to do for years, and that was that I wanted to start with proper old school Let's Plays on YouTube. And I've started with that and
Ooh.
I absolutely love it. I wake up in the morning, take on my makeup, and sit here and play games for hours. And yeah.
I did that for a while. I've not done it in a while, but I did really enjoy it. Like back
Yes.
when the Switch One came out, I did a offline recorded Let's Play of Breath of the Wild, and that was so much fun.
Yes. But other than that, I've been playing Pal World because that is now out as its proper fully release. If you do not know what Pal World is it has been called like Pokemon with guns, open world Pokemon. They have even been in a court situation with Pokemon because they
Yeah.
are similar.
Some of their creatures are very, 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 very similar.
Yes, but I have to say, even though I am a big Nintendo fan and I am a big Pokemon fan because Pokemon was my heart game as a child, I have had fun with Pal World a lot.
How different is it to when it was first in early access? Because like I played some of it in early access, and my takeaway was I'm certainly playing a lot of it, but am I enjoying it? I don't know. I was playing it because I felt
Yes.
compelled to, like the addiction loop was happening,
Yes.
not necessarily because I was having fun with it.
Yeah, so the addiction loop is still there. That is not gone
Yeah.
anywhere.
Okay.
And it feels to be like I also played it in the start, and my gameplay feels the same. So from A to
Yeah.
Z, where I'm going, it feels the same. But what it does differ with a bit more is that everything is more smoothly. It's actually you have a story to follow. Every
Okay.
settings is actually now properly introduced. Things are just polished. It is
Yeah.
a finished game now, and it actually also have a shit ton, and that is a metric of settings and accessibility in this game. I wrote a blog post of, yeah, that is also something I started with over the summer. Old school blogging. I think I just want to go back to like 2010. I think that's my life right now.
Hell yeah, let's bring back the 2010s internet.
So I started blogging, and that blog post has gone like, I have thousands of views on it because, well, people don't have anywhere else to go. So again, developers, put this info on your own page. And I won't get a clicks. You can get a clicks. But it has a lot of it. I can't even go through all of them at the moment because it's so many. But cool things. They have a lot of cool motion sickness. So the game is played in third person mode, which is really good. Mm-hmm. And you can turn off motion sickness, increase field of view, turn off camera shake, and increase the rider camera distance. So if you ride on any of your pals, you get even further back so you don't feel that typical motion sickness. It also have crosshair, so when you shoot your bow or weapons, you get a crosshair. That one you can actually change between like 5 colors and get an outline. So say you wanted to have green, you can have it green with a black outline, which is cool. Volume sliders. You can also turn off and on more like important sounds. So say you want everything off except the important sounds, which I think is smart. And when you do multiplayer, you can have the typical push to talk and open mic and stuff like that. Font size can be made larger, but this is not a game that has been done anything good for blind accessibility, sadly. But it's fully playable with a controller, which is how I played it. Absolutely loved playing it like that. It has a good aim assist, but I think and also almost every building you build a lot, you put together pal balls or whatever they're called, spheres, pal spheres, I think they what they ended up having to call them after Nintendo came knocking on their door. And like every building and stuff, you can have a toggle to hold, which is right good. So you can just go over to something and then you also get a bit of a break while you have to stand there and build something. But I think what they have done best is that they have given us the absolutely most amazing difficulty settings in any game I've seen. Because they have their casual mode, easy mode, normal mode, hardcore, which is survival. But then they have custom difficulty settings. And it is over 40 different settings you can change. Everything from how long every day is, how long the night is, XP rate, this pal's stamina for that matter, the damage you take, the damage you flick to others, how fast your hunger goes down. It is just insanely complicated. Like to some
that
of
is
the,
really cool.
Yeah, like because like pal, this is a AAA game now, but it wasn't when it first got released because the studio used to be quite small. Now it's gigantic because this space sold into the millions. But to see this from a company we have not seen things like this from before is incredible. Like say if you struggle with getting things done during the day, just chuck up that daytime speed. If you get scared from everything that's happening now, it's because the game gets a bit harder at night. Just turn down the nighttime. And it's just like really, really, really well done. Really, really well done.
Yeah, it's interesting because all of the things you're saying do sound really promising. And despite that, I know I'm probably not going to play it.
Yeah.
Because as I say, like the problem I had with that game, and it sounds like this fundamentally hasn't changed, is the same problem I had with No Man's Sky back in the day, which is the way the game is fundamentally built is at all times it's very well, I built this and while that's building I need to be collecting this resource, and well, I finished collecting that resource, I need to set this building now. And like you're always in between two or three different things are currently ongoing in such a way that there's no good exit ramp.
Yes.
There's no like there's no good point where it's like I've reached a point where all, for right now all of my tasks are done. And unless I actively start a new one, I've got a pause point I can put the game down and stop playing.
Yeah.
And without that, it's really easy to be like, when this was in early access, I played it for like 8 hours and went, I did not intend to play that long. And yeah. I feel like I've done nothing other than just walk around in circles. And like, I know that's there's certain games that I know just aren't going to be healthy for me to play, and it does
Yes.
sound like Pal World still has that compulsion loop that can be hard to exit
Yeah,
from.
the only thing that is a di bit different now is that the quests and the side quests are a lot like more defined, and also with the day night cycle that it eagers you quite in the start to make a bed. So a lot of times when I have stopped is after I've been sleeping, and I went like, okay, but all my pals are sleeping at the night. The game want me to sleep at night unless I'm going to get something specific at night. So that is a bit better, but I 110% understand what you mean. And I, by just listening to what you're saying, do not think this is the game because it isn't that much taken away from that. The game is still what it is. It is a
And
lot into one game.
it doesn't mean a game like that can never be for me. I keep being tempted to retry No Man's Sky, but I'm like, sometimes I just know like I'm gonna have a rough time with
Yeah, it's the
the
same with me, like with No Man's Sky, because that is too open for me. It's too
game.
open because it's too much, do whatever you want. So I can see that, yeah. So what have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of Splatoon Raiders,
Ooh.
the new Switch 2 game that's Splatoon traditionally has been an online multiplayer shooter, but it's made by Nintendo and your goal is to like paint the floor rather than paint like actively shooting other people. And they've made a single player, or you can play it in co-op, but it's you versus the computer Splatoon game, where it's no longer about painting the floor and trying to get as much of the floor painted as possible. It's based on a mode that existed in Splatoon 3 called Salmon Rush, where
Yeah.
you are fighting against these sort of like fish-based enemies that drop these like big glowing orange circles that are like fish eggs, and you collect a bunch of those up. So this is based on that. You're dropping into like maybe 5 minute long levels. There's a bunch of fish-based enemies. Some of them are difficult to fight in various ways, like they might be armored or they're spraying paint out of them that you've got to dodge around. Beat them, collect a bunch of collectibles, go to the next level. And in terms of accessibility, there is some stuff going on that I quite like. One of the biggest issues that the original Splatoon had, and this is one that they have fixed in some of the multiplayer Splatoons, but I'm glad it's in Splatoon Raiders as well, is by default, the color of your ink and the color of your character's hair change randomly every time you load into a level. You can set this so that your color of ink is always one color and the enemy ink is always a second color, and that those don't change. And there's a couple of options of what color you want your ink to be and what color you want the enemy ink to be, which is really good, not only for color blindness, but it's good for just cognitive accessibility, for making easy to at a glance go, pink is always me, yellow's always the enemy. So I really appreciate that. But the big thing I really like about this is the diversity of builds it offers and how that scales with its difficulty options. So there are difficulty modes. There's easy, normal, and hard. They might not be called exactly that, but that's basically what they are. They don't change any of the rewards you get or any of the enemy attack patterns you're fighting against. All they change is the amount of damage that enemies deal to you and the amount you deal to them. They scale the damage, but you still get an identical experience and you still unlock identical rewards. And that's a big deal because the rewards are like the big reason you're playing this game. They've added a couple of other mechanics onto the old Splatoon. So, like, you've got all the different types of weapons you had in the other Splatoon games. You've got guns, paintbrushes, swords, big paint rollers. But you now also have three different classes of paint tank you can equip, and each of those can have multiple gadgets equipped to them. So, like, one is technical, and it'll be like throw down auto-firing turrets, or one of them's power-based, and you can, like, do super big attacks right in front of you, like melee attacks that do massive damage, or there's a speed one that's lots of, like, moving you very quickly around the environment tools. So, all of these, just like from the start, really allow you to go, how do I want to play this game? Let's lean into that. Am I bad at shooting specific things? I'll use the tank that lets me have auto-firing turrets. So like that can shoot at stuff I'm struggling to shoot. Oh, I'm really bad at getting away from enemies when I need a second to get my health back. I'll use the speed one and like I can leap halfway across the map or whatever. But also, every time you complete a level, you unlock modifiers that allow you to tweak how those gadgets work. So you can lean them into, like, do I want the speed gadgets that let me travel really big distances to let me travel even further distances or recharge faster so I can hop out of the way of damage more quickly? Do I want to apply, like, more modifiers to damage, or do I want, like, I've got these swirling paintballs around me. Do I want them to have a larger radius so enemies, like, don't get as close to me? And the way that all of these rewards are handed out makes it really easy to go, what am I getting on well with in this game? Let me move my mechanics to, like, shore up my weaknesses and make the game easier for the way I want to play it. And mechanically, I've had so much more success playing this than I ever did actual Splatoon, because of these customization options. It's been a really enjoyable game. I also really like that it doesn't scale up the difficulty if you play in co-op. The co-op's really good in that you basically, let's say my wife Jane is level 30 in game and I'm level 50, and we decide I hop into her game to play co-op. The enemies will deal more damage to me because I'm a higher level, but they won't deal more damage to her. They scale the amount of damage the enemies do to you based on your level and where your stats are at. So
Smart.
you can play with someone of a really different level and be having the same level of challenge in one co-op match. Lastly, I really like the way that this game encourages getting help from strangers online for levels you're stuck with. Any level you're stuck on, you can press one button to call for help, and it'll bring in three other players from across the internet who have agreed to just help a random person in need.
Nice.
And they can come in and help you, and they can be completely overleveled and, like, really help you do a level. If they're unsuccessful in helping you finish the level, you can ask for help again straight away. If they successfully help you complete the level, I think you have to wait 20 minutes before you can call for help again. The idea being, hey, you get to another level that you're struggling with, 20 minutes is a reasonable amount of time to be like, give it a go yourself, try it a few times. That's going to be like three or four attempts yourself. If you're still struggling, don't worry, call the internet back in again. And I think that's balanced pretty well. Once a day, you get, like, really big in-game rewards for the first time in a day that you go help another player that's struggling with a level. So they encourage you to, like, be part of that pool helping other players out. And, like, it's just so welcoming. I'm having a great time with it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it's been real fun. What about you? What else have you been playing?
I can talk about a really, 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 really small indie game I've been playing called Call LLC. So it's an incremental game where the point of the game is that it's like a really pixelated, I have to say, a bit ugly game. But the idea is that you every day have an amount of coal you need to get. It's 2D. You go down to the mine, you jump down in the mine, and you try to get coal, and that amount increases every single day, but you get money for coal and then you can buy new things. You can buy employees, you can buy weapons, fancy stuff, wings, and so on and so on. And the point is to either come get to level 15, which is a finishing level, or level 25, then you have like done the whole thing. And this is such a fun, I love these small incremental games. I find them always to be really, really fun. And like addicting, but in not the serious way, addicting in the fun way. In the like, oh yeah, this feels good. That good feeling in the body. And I wrote a blog post about it because I want people to know a bit about the accessibility in case somebody wanted to know. And I wrote a bit about how this is one of those games that get ridiculous. So you don't have 10 employees. You end up with 100,000, if not a million employees, because you incremental get so and so much better. So in the start, it's really hard, and then you go crazy in this game. And that is really, really fun. They also have difficulty settings, so you can have peaceful mode where you actually do not need to get more coal every single day. You can just play. And you just get money for what coal you get, and then you can buy upgrades, so you don't have any hardship while playing. is also slow mode, where you only have half the call amount you need every single day. But the day is timed. So you start with quite, I think it's 1 minute, and then you can buy upgrades to make the day longer as you go. But the thing with this game is that, yes, you have music sliders, and you have a slider for like your chunks, so like the chunks of coal that is loaded in or other ores that loads in. But the problem is that when you have say 500, half a million employees on the screen, that it will be patterns. So imagine the old Windows screensaver had one of those where it was like a falling card that went and it jumped. That is like that amount of pattern that comes, which can be triggering for people with seizures or people with migraines. So I wrote a blog post where at the end I wrote that that is the thing that is a bit problematic in the game. And I also wrote that, hey, if you use bombs in the game, they have a little flash. It's not the whole screen if you're not zoomed in properly. But say, like, I at one game, I had 100 of mortar guns. And they then had a bomb going off every 3 seconds. That is 300 small blinks in every 5 seconds. If you don't have any problems with your brain, even I, who only have a small itty bitty tiny brain damage, could feel that like I got headaches because the flashing, it's just not good for you if you have any of these problems. And I wrote about it on a blog post, and I posted about it on Blue Sky, and the developer actually saw it, and they wrote and said, "I have never thought that this is actually something that could be problematic. I'm going to look into it."
Oh, that's always so good when that happens.
And he said that he would, because I said either you can see if you can make the bombs less, or you can just have like a number that pops up. Or just not make them flashing white, just like a black border, or of course nothing at all. That would be the best. And he said he will be looking into it. I have not seen if it's any upgrade updates yet. This is a single developer, really, really tiny. I think this is his first or second game, so give them time. But I am so glad to see that a developer saw this and took it serious and are looking into it, and it will be fixed. But if you have seizures or any disorder that can affect your brain, please be a bit careful playing this game, and remember to take a lot of breaks when you play games like this. So yeah, do you have any more games?
I've got a couple I can very quickly talk about. I don't need to go into huge depth on them. I've been playing the new Pocopia DLC that came out, the Bubbly Basin DLC. It adds some really nice quality of life stuff that's been really appreciated. The main thing is it adds a new area, which is an underwater town. Whether you buy the DLC or not, there's been an update to the game so that now you can put a little bubble of air above your head and you can go underwater for as long as you like, which means trying to do things like repairing things underneath water, you're way less likely to drown. But there's now a bunch of really, really appreciated stuff in the DLC. Like, one of my biggest issues was storage boxes for crafting materials. I left all of my crafting boxes and storage materials together, like in the starting town, and running back there every time I needed to get crafting materials was a nightmare. So I tended to have just like half my inventory was like the basic crafting materials all the time. There's now special storage boxes you can put stuff in, where if you make one of those storage boxes, you can get anything that's in it from any other one of those storage
Oh,
boxes.
perfect.
So all of like the important crafting materials just live in that, and from every town I can just go to the crafting bench and instantly have all the stuff. It doesn't have to be clogging up my inventory. That's really good.
That's good.
There's some other nice stuff in there, like new ways of clearing out blocks more quickly that are very appreciated. Just a lot of stuff that's designed around making it more convenient to do long-term building projects, which I've really liked. A lot of this new area is built around the idea that the deeper you go in the ocean, the darker things get. So you will go down trenches and It'll be sort of pitch black with only a little cone of light around you, unless you build lighting underwater to light those areas up. It will mean that initially some of those areas are going to be a little inaccessible. For players with who struggle with vision, what is meant to be, oh, you can kind of muddle your way through here just in the low light, is going to be less accessible than I think it's intended to be for some players. So just be aware of that. It's not a hard barrier to progression, and you can build light sources to mitigate it, but like it's a major feature of this new area that's worth being aware of. But otherwise, it's just more Pocopia and it's very charming and I'm having a lovely time with it. The other one I'll get out of the way quickly is I've started playing Final Fantasy XIV,
Nice.
the MMO Final Fantasy game, which I played back in the day at some point, and I remember none of it. But it's just come to Switch 2, and people keep telling me it's amazing, and I'm like, okay, I'll try it again, I'll see. I do appreciate from a like value perspective, there is a free trial that lets you play the base game and the first three expansions and up to level 70 with a character, which is a lot of free gameplay available to go, is this for me? Which is very
Yeah.
appreciated. It's an MMO that is on a console, obviously. And from an accessibility perspective, I'm very glad that you can just turn a Joy-Con on its side and use it as a mouse. So if you want to click on UI things that there's lots of in MMOs, you can just use it as a mouse. That's great. But it also has a surprisingly good controller control scheme for an MMO. The main thing is, if you hold down, or you can tap it, you can set it in the menu to be a tap to toggle rather than a hold. L2 will bring up a hot bar of 8 slots that are mapped to your A, B, X, and Y, and your 4 D-pad directions that are for non-combat abilities. And then R2 brings up a different 8 slots that is those same buttons that is combat abilities. So you can, like, press or hold down L2 or R2, and instantly those 8 face buttons are either, okay, now they're doing the non-combat things, now they're doing the combat things, and you've got like 8 buttons to activate 8 things on cooldowns. It's a surprisingly robust system. You can also tap one of the shoulder buttons to. You can rotate between multiple hotbars, so you can basically have. If you need more than 8 things in your combat hotbar, you can still have them mapped to those front four face buttons pretty effectively, which, yeah, surprisingly good way to mechanically control an MMO on console. I've heard that the load times on Switch 2 are a little longer than on other platforms, and that there is a bit of a problem of if people on other platforms realize you're playing on Switch 2 and you're in a raid, they might kick you out of the raid because, well, if you die, you're going to be gone slightly longer than someone else would be reloading, and we want someone who's going to get back in the fight a few seconds faster, so we're going to kick you out for someone else to enter your slot in the raid, which is, I've yet to reach the point where I'm doing raids where that would be a problem, and I don't know if that's just people who are playing on micro SD rather than on system memory, because there's some loading time differences
Yeah.
there, but it's a shame to hear, because I know I'm way more likely to play an MMO if it's on a handheld, where I can be playing it while watching something on the TV, where I can second screen it. Because I will lose my life if I full screen an MMO.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So I'm hoping this isn't as big a problem as it sounds like it might be.
No, it sounds like sweaty gamers being sweaty gamers, but you need to be on a level like. And it happens most likely. It seems like something somebody write about that they annoyed about on Twitter and stuff, and then it gets to be bigger than what is actually people doing it. I
Yeah,
hope so.
I've heard it's been brought up by a few people, so I'm like, yeah, we'll see. But
Yeah.
for now, I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah. And if not,
It's a bit,
it's a good like reason to get a little friend group to play together with.
Yeah. I'll say this: it's a little slow to start. I've been assured that by the time you get to about level 15, it picks up. Its starting section is very go do very traditional MMO fetch quests of like kill 8 of these rabbits out in the field, and the story takes a while, where like during the first few hours I have no idea who my character is or why I should care about their big grand adventure. So be ready for it to be a bit of a slow start if you pick it up. But
Yeah.
I've been assured it's good, and I'll report back in future weeks if it's picked up.
I have tried that game twice and fallen off twice because it took too long.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
so.
here's the thing. I fell off Mass Effect 3 or 4 times before I finally played it through, and that became one of my favorite
Yeah.
series ever. So I know that me falling off a game doesn't mean I wouldn't love it if I stuck with it. But I also know there's a reason I fell off it before, and I'm hoping being on handheld will get me over that hurdle this time.
Yeah.
But what about you? You played anything else you want to talk
Yeah, I
about?
have two games I can quickly go through as well. I have played again Fields of Mystria, that is now out. I have talked about Fields of Mystria before. It is a cutesy, 90s girl pop, Stardew Valley kind of game, and it is absolutely amazing. Characters in that game is so cool. They have taken everything you miss from Stardew Valley, they have put into this game, and it's actually quite accessible compared to other cutesy, cozy simulator games. Because a lot of them, sadly, there is this still idea that cozy means equals accessible at once, which that is not true. So it is nice to see that we have a game that takes things serious. I have talked about it before, and it is almost the same as before, so I would go through everything they have, but I will point out some things that they have. They are controller supported, but they have not put any ways to like change your name or any other character's name if you are in control, which I think is bad. Like that is not fully controller support if you cannot change your name while you are in controller. But that is the only problem I've had with the controller. Well, maybe the other thing is that I find it to be a bit awkward because there is a difference between slicing something or using a tool in charged and rapidly using, but I've just remapped one of them to L3, the more charged one, because I don't use it that often. Other things this game have, which I think is really cool to mention, is that it has a possibility to turn off every eating and drinking sound. So if you have misophonia, that will help you, so you don't need to hear that. You can have longer days, so if you struggle finishing anything you want to do in a day, you can just turn on either longer or longest daytime. I am though, I have seen, I'm playing now the 1.0.2 version, that some of the accessibility settings don't actually take effect in game when you turn them on. So one of them is the fact that you can take, so every at the end of every day you get up a list of everything that you have gotten of things and stuff and how much it's worth and how much you sell it for, kind of. This is the same in Stardew Valley. And there the background moves. So it's like it gives you an overview. It goes like over your whole farm. And I get really motion sick if that happens. If something in the middle of the screen is stuck and everything around moves really fast, I get motion sick. And they have a setting that helps that, but sadly it doesn't work right now and I don't know why. So, just FYI, but I think it is worth trying. Sadly, this is not a game that will be any more accessible for people who are blind. Then a modded Stardew Valley will still be your best bet on that thing. But for other people, I do recommend checking out this game because I really enjoyed it. And last, I played a game today, so I've started doing Let's Plays, like old school Let's Plays on YouTube. And I played a game today called Tukoni. I think it's supposed to be called Tukoni. And it's an old school point and click of you are a forest guardian and you're going through and making sure autumn is happening as it should be happening. So it's a point and click. And one thing and the reason why I wanted to talk about it today is because this game is point and click traditionally is done with your mouse, but this game actually asks you to use a controller, which means that if you have any disability, any motor disability, making you have to have a specialized controller, You will be able to play this game as long as it's the same setup as an Xbox controller or a Nintendo controller. You will 100% be able to play this game. I played from start to finish only with a controller, and it was easy peasy. And this is a point and click adventure game. It was absolutely, or a puzzle game. It was absolutely amazingly cozy. It's like 2 to 3 hours long. It comes out today when the podcast is out. We'll highly, highly recommend you guys to check it out.
Yay! Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Right, should we talk about a couple of newsy bits from the past couple of weeks?
Yes, we can do so.
I can talk a little bit, and I'll keep this brief, but I went to the Game Accessibility Gathering at Unity in Brighton that went on recently. This is not officially part of Develop, but it happens every year, the last couple of years, during the week of Develop. It is hosted by Unity and Minicat Studios, sponsored by PlayStation, Playtest Cloud, Scopely. Carrie and Joe host this. They've hosted it the last few years. It's their baby. This lovely event that's very, like, it's accessible, and it's very, like, entry-level approachable accessibility discussions. But there's some stuff in here that I didn't know that I thought was pretty cool. I believe all these talks are going to be uploaded to their website. I don't know if they're up currently, but I can talk about some of them here. There was a micro talk called Say Yes to Start: How Custom Voice Commands Affect Gameplay. This was a really interesting talk. Maybe my favorite of the day was talking about voice control options in video games. Basically, it talked a lot, this talk, about the machine has to understand your voice, meaning there's a lot of points for failure. Things like stress, accent, volume of speech can all impact the accuracy of voice controls. Goes on to talk about, like, the fact there are no industry standards for voice controls. A lot of it is relying on players to set up their own setups, and that means there's, like, a huge amount of work often involved in getting a voice accessible setup. But there are some pros I hadn't considered. Things like multiple words can be mapped to the same command. Thinking about the fact that, like, if you're thinking about a game that's going to be voice controlled, it ideally needs to be one that takes into account how voice input, there's going to be a bit of a delay of the computer registering what you've said and doing the input. Do you need, like, games that work with delayed reaction times? Limitations of things like you need a gap of dead air every either side of the voice clip you're saying for it to be recognized well. And then lots of advice in here about, like, how to get into making voice commands for games. So stuff like keep your commands simple, make sure your phrases are phonetically distinct. Bear in mind you're going to need about a 2 second reaction plus input time with voice, and sort of planning your inputs around that. Being able to set up things like direction and number for macros for things like, if you're trying to travel, rather than being like forward, 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 be like forward 7, so that it just repeats that input that many times, and learning how to do that for things. Talks about the fact that precision's quite hard to do in voice controls. There's a lot of cognitive load involved in playing with. The fact that you're having to deal with this time offset while playing creates a lot of cognitive load, and how tough that is. Yeah, it was a really interesting talk I learned a lot from. Maybe my favourite thing from it was the discussion of voice commands on console, because one of the only devices or categories of device out there that allows for voice controls on console is the same devices that are being used by first-person shooter players to cheat in FPS games. And as such, those devices keep getting banned by Xbox and PlayStation, despite they're the only devices that allow voice input. And that sort of points out why it's so important for Microsoft and PlayStation to officially, on a software level, start supporting voice inputs.
Yep.
So yeah, really, really good talk. It was by @voicedgaming.bsky.social. So @voicedgaming.bluesky.social. If this talk goes up online, I'm going to link to it, because this was maybe the talk I learned the most from, as someone that, like, already knows a lot about accessibility going into the day. Other talks that happened, there was What's the answer? Approaching accessibility in video game puzzles. It was an interesting talk that talked about ideas like having more than one solution to a puzzle, how you signal success in puzzles, how you deal with like language as a barrier in puzzle design, things like signaling. How do you signal that a puzzle exists in the first place in your in your world? How many steps are there to completing your puzzle, and can you stop partway through that process? Yeah, really solid look at puzzle design. Raise a bunch of interesting questions that if you're making a puzzle game, I would recommend giving that talk a look. There was not all captions are created equal. Do's and don'ts for subtitle implementation in your game. This talked a lot about the ideas of the key ideas for captions are form, function, and context. So, like, are they legible? Can you resize them? Do you have font options? Things like that. Points to Return to Monkey Island is a really good example for very, very well customizable text. Then you look at like function, which is things like are you captioning sound categories, dialogue, gameplay critical sounds, lyrics, having different kinds of captions and separating them out visually. Watch Dogs Legion was like the big example pointed there. And then context. So, like, do the subtitles tell you who is speaking? Do they indicate direction of where the sound's coming from? Do you have speaker names in different colors? Things like non-verbal captions for laughter, sighing. Do your captions indicate things like volume changes? Again, here pointing at Assassin's Creed Shadows is a great example. Really good basics piece here that, like, if every game with captions in looked at this talk and designed their captions based on this talk, it would solve 99% of the problems we have with captions in the games industry. Last ones we had a micro talk called Inclusive Gaming Communities, which is from a charity that's helping to make online video games accessible, like accessible gaming communities that are accessible for disabled children. They have a big focus on things like preventing children getting addicted to gambling mechanics via video games, creating moderated servers where they've checked and confirmed that the only people being added to those servers are children, where there are adults around to moderate disagreements, creating child-safe moderated spaces for online gameplay, things like that that are intersectional, that make sure that, like, we're creating a safe spot not just for disabled youth, but acknowledging that, like, lots of different intersections are looking for safe spaces and trying to make sure that, like, this disabled safe space can be intersectional. Last one of the micro talks, I think, is Oppidum, a survival adventure with accessibility in mind. This is about a 1 to 4 player open world co-op game. Basically, this is a story of a very small studio with very few resources trying to work out what they could do to get as much accessibility in their game by launch day as they could. It's an interesting little story. And then last was a panel called Getting Started with Accessibility Consultancy. We do this as a job, so not a lot in here was necessarily important to us, but the talk involved stuff like paying attention to the distinction between being a lived experience consultant versus a broad accessibility specialist outside of your own experience. A specialist focusing on lived experience focusing on like one core subject that you have your own experience with, versus a specialist being able to go, I have my own lived experiences, but also I understand enough of the broader industry to talk about best practices for things that don't personally impact me. And point at specialists who might be able to go further from there. Having a surface experience on a wide variety of topics and understanding somewhat how the game development process works is a really big key in making that step from like lived experience to being more of a broad specialist. A lot of the talk in here is things like making sure you have a sales deck and a rate card visibly available. Do you rate your hours differently depending on the kind of work or kind of clients you're doing? Things that I'd not thought of, which are things like in your listed set of rates you have for doing consultancy work, consider having things like what are the security measures for your home office, to make sure that, like, client data that's sent to you will remain, classified. Do you know, like, what kind of experience do you have with development studios outside of accessibility consultancy that they might find useful? Are you here as a player or an expert? And, like, making sure that you're setting those expectations for, like, your pay and experience alongside your rate card, which I think is, like, really good stuff to be thinking about. So yeah, it was a day of talks, and there was some really good stuff in there. I would recommend checking these out. I will check in a moment whether they're online already, and I'll mention by the end of this episode if they're already online. But if any of those sounded interesting, they're well worth checking out. Where should we go to from here, do you
We
reckon?
can do a quick one. So GA Conf, the American version or the USA version dates are now set. So it's going to be fully online this time around as well, and it's going to be on October 19th to October 20th. So yeah.
Yeah. That'll, as ever, be available to watch online. So if you're not in America or not in a position to travel to America, as some of us are at the moment, you'll be able to watch all of these online. There's a Discord where you can talk to other people while the talks are happening.
Yeah.
It'll be a bunch of really good educational content as ever.
Yeah, this one is, as the last one was, fully remote, it says. So it's
Yeah.
fully online. Yeah. I am pretty
Once
sh
again,
yeah,
it'll
online,
be
yeah.
probably a good yeah. It'll probably be a good mix of some stuff that is entry level, some stuff that is more specialist.
Yes.
So there should be something for everyone.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I would say, like, the last big bit of news this week that's worth tackling is another game developer has started using the Accessible Games Initiative standardized tags now. In this case, it's Electronic Arts, which they're not having great news around them at the moment, what with their recent acquisition by the Saudi government, but this is positive.
Yeah.
If you go look on their website, on the store pages for Split Fiction, Tales of KenZerezao, Dragon Age: The Veilguard, Apex Legends, and some others, you can now see the Accessible Gaming Initiative's standardized tags, which we've talked about those before. Xbox and Ubisoft both make use of those now. More companies are standardizing this language. According to Morgan Baker, who is Accessibility Director at EA, these tags will come to more games later. They're taking their time to make sure they're applying the right standardized tags to each game. But yeah, they're doing the process of another company has gotten on board with the standardized tags now.
And I
Yeah.
think that is for us for today.
Yeah, I'm just going to very quickly check. Apologies for the crossfade. I'm going to very quickly check if those accessibility talks are up.
YouTube. They are not up.
Okay. Yeah, they don't seem to be up yet, but I will, in a future week when they go up, I'll mention it on this show because those talks are really good and they're well worth checking out. I'm happy to share my notes as well if people are interested, but they'll be at Game Accessibility Gathering on YouTube when they go up, presumably. But yeah, that's everything for this episode. Arevia, where can people find you on the internet? What are you up to?
You can find me under Ravia everywhere except TikTok because somebody stole my name. There I am, Ravia Gaming. I have started doing Let's Plays on YouTube.
Yeah, you have.
So, like, you want good old playthroughs? Come to my YouTube. I would so love if people would start watching those. If you like this old school Spyro, maybe some Fields of Mistria, the games I've been talking about today. Come over there and take a look. And also, if you want puppy pictures, go to my Instagram because by now, when this is out, I have two dogs. I have Luna, my fantastic 8-year-old Chipper Key, and now we also have a little itty bitty puppy Chipper Key called Nova. So yeah, on Instagram right now, it will be full of puppies. So if you're still
I've
on,
got your I've got your YouTube up right now, and I'm hovering over that The Best Boy Is Back Spyro Reignited Trilogy 100% Part 1.
Yes.
I'm getting it ready to watch that first
Yes.
2.5 hours of Spyro.
Yes. And Laura, where can I find you?
You can find me at Laura K Buzz pretty much everywhere on the internet. What have we got going up at the moment? You can check out Where Everybody Has Gone Before, where myself and fellow accessibility person Jeffrey Bunting roll a randomized wheel of every Star Trek episode and talk about whatever episode the wheel dictates we watch. It won't be up for a couple of weeks, but we watched an episode of Star Trek where everyone de-evolves into animals recently. It's a notoriously bad episode. One man is half a spider, half a human at one point. It's horrifying.
Ew.
If you want to see what Star Trek is throwing at us, check out Where Everybody Has Gone Before. That's up on youtube.com/LauraKBuzz. LauraKBuzz is where you'll find me on most things. Patreon, that's what pays the bills. As little as $1 a month means I can keep doing all this stuff. Dice Funk, Queer and Pleasant Strangers, Fix Your Heart or Die, Podquisition, Accessibility. I do so many things. LauraKBuzz, you'll find them all.
Yes.
Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. We'll be back in another couple of weeks. Goodbye.
Bye.